And welcome back to Journeys with JP on Revolution Radio, a listener-supported station. Why not check out the seed pack and go to the support area at www.freedomslips.com. We are also simulcasting through Wolf Spirit Radio. Come to www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen to join in the chat room there. Very friendly place. You can also come to the forum there and enjoy the conversation with some of the most intelligent listeners on the web. Also simulcast through Ever Beyond Radio, and you can come there and you can book sessions with me. So that's everbeyondradio.com. Now, today, my guest, my esteemed guest, my lovely guest, is Eva Zemanova, speaking from Prague, all the way in the center of Europe, in the place that was untouched by the Ice Age, where the elephants lived for a long, long time. Do you know about that? You know, Hannibal brought elephants to Rome.
Hannibal Antiportes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I believe the elephants came from, not from south, they come from east. Yeah. Brought them from the valleys of Bulgaria and Romania and all that. They were all in there.
Yeah. But now we have two types of elephants, and one is Indian elephant with the small ears, and the African elephant with the big ears. Yeah, and they're both endangered species. But it's definitely that India and Africa were once closely connected. So, because the fauna is very similar, and there is lots of transference, also similarity between the plants of South India. Of course, India is kind of a long continent. It reaches down to the very tip, to the Indian Ocean. There is the tropical zone, and then the whole subtropical zones north up to the Himalayas. So India has lots of diversity, and also human diversity, because it's quite a populous country, and cultural diversity, and so India is jam-packed with history.
So India itself is a seed pack, as I was mentioning, let's talk about going all the way to the seed, which is back to the Bodh Gaya landing. This is where it all comes from, because when you arrived here, it was barren, and now it's not. So it's got to be something to do with you guys, or us guys, or however it all works out. You know, who we identify as these ancient ancestors of ours.
Yeah, so that's a mystery of the civilization as we know it now, right? So we have all kinds of diverse ancestors, and as you have been mentioning previously, we kind of incorporated people from different parts of the universe, or at least so is the common belief, how different people and races came here. Then after, even though my idea about this like kind of spectacular human evolution is that in the deep, deep past, you would have to use the time machine, your time machine again.
Meanwhile, long ago.
Right, and now it's the chirping birds and the soft breeze of the ancient winds blowing over the surface. I can hear them in my mind, but the people they will say we are already hallucinating on the show. See, anything is coming. No birds. Birds grew quiet.
Can't hear the birds. You should be able to hear the birds. It's a very quiet, gentle. Oh, hang on. There we go. There's the birds. So, meanwhile, long time ago.
Wonderful. So, our first ancestors, they suffered this accident and steep decline, and then slowly they started to shape themselves, put themselves back to shape biologically and civilization-wise, and I believe they evolved many old civilizations. We have no idea or name for as of the moment. Forget about the myths of Atlantis and Lemurias, as you have said. So those who came millions and millions of years ago are long gone now. We don't know the names. We probably won't find really good remnants or remains of them. Or maybe we will. Maybe they have buried a time capsule somewhere. So that would be really something if we could find a time capsule containing some knowledge readable by us, by today's technical means, or even any simple means that would convey the message, hey, we have been here that and that long ago, and we have been already pretty advanced, and we left. You know, some of us, they left for Andromeda, or we have left for the Pleiades, we left for the nearby stars to find ourselves a better home. So I believe that in past there were actually these kind of epochs that when those ancient human ancestors evolved enough technology, so they really went to explore the surrounding universe, and they perhaps settled somewhere else. And sure that after some time, that maybe thousands or millions of years, they came back, they came to see, they came to check up on here and what's happened here in the meantime. So one of the options I'm considering is that we are really all siblings, you know, speaking of these nearby space intelligences. So many of them are at least partially human, or we recognize them according to the same imprint. We have the same intelligent imprint. We can communicate. Perhaps, you know, it's like they drifted away for a few millions of years, so the language will be different and the appearance will be varied, and we won't have the same mentality anymore. And they come and look at these humans here. They really think we are backwards and we are the old settlers. But I hope that they also and that they have respect and that they have compassion towards humanity, and there to help us, and so on. So where did we stop?
Well, I was one of the places that we did stop was the idea of the loop. You know, the idea of the this ship was caught in a gravity loop, and then we've also got this looping karmic wheel that we seem to be on. And indeed, you know, behind you, obviously we're on audio, but behind you is a beautiful tanka, a Tibetan silk drawing of the Kalachakra mandala, which, you know, it's a circular square design. There we go. It's beautiful. I mean, it to me, what this looks like is a pyramid from above. Is like a design of a pyramid temple if you look at it directly from the plan.
Yeah,
But it's
it's actually a
multidirectional.
3D temple. Yeah, it's completely multidimensional. It's supposed to have at least like six dimensions.
Yes.
It has many meanings, but it's completely a 3D temple. It's also 4D structure because it basically describes the nature of time. One of its functions is to help to describe a time as a kind of organized entity, a structure, and how it evolves the space.
So, yeah, interest.
Back in the loop, yeah.
Yeah, meanwhile, the loop. So, and the other thing is the color chakra. I was just thinking, I wonder if that's the design of the inside of the ship. Is that, I mean, you're talking about a very, very ancient symbol that is a two-dimensional representation of a multidimensional thing. And it's round, sitting on a square platform, yeah, but it's round. Is this what we're talking about?
It
Could this be?
could be kind of archetypal depiction of the sphere of the hemisphere that brought us here. But I believe there is even more information coded in the mandala. It's pretty complicated. There are 722 deities or the Buddhas inside the mandala.
How many?
722.
722 individual
722.
deities, each one with their own character and name and everything, yeah?
And each one, is completely individual, has completely individual characteristics and symbolizes a function. I think the closest you could go to work with the mandala would be probably deciphering it in a kind of mathematical way, because it's a highly organized structure. It's kind of a chip. This is what I saw many things in it, because I spent almost 6 years just sitting looking to that big Alachandra mandala on the much, much bigger big wall of the temple, and it has these mandalas on the wall, and I kept looking to that, and it was much better than a TV or anything similar. It really has a perspective. It has really deep inner perspective, and it's just you can see m many amazing things just looking through it. And it's not the way the Kala Chakra meditation or the practice is done traditionally. It has the practice when I also kept reading the Kala Chakra practice, so it's kind of a sequence. And after the Bodh Gaya event, when I actually learned how, or I tried to then learn how things relate, how they connect, what they mean, then I thought definitely the mandala is just a little, it's a snippet of information that one of the ancient seers, either it was Buddha or it was one of the Indian Mahasiddhas who were working with these yantras and these mandalas, because the Kala Chakra tradition is pre-Buddhist. It's older than Buddhism. It exists in Vedas, and it exists out of Buddhism originally. So they were able to see these mandalas like the perfect a reflection of a perfect reality of great magnitude. And kind of in a simple form, the way the crop circles appear in the English countryside. So in a similar way, the old gurus and yogis were getting these reflections of another higher dimensional reality and organized patterns, and they were trying to explain the process, how to reconnect our mind that fell to the gravity and to the error, how to reconnect ourselves back with this other reality and what they call the alternative time space, which is the very center of the Kala Chakra mandala, because the mandala has three three levels, three transcendental levels of the outer time, which is like the solar time and the planetary time and this and that, and the inner time, which is more like the body clock, the biological clock, and the ways we are timed as living beings. And then the innermost mandala represents the alternative time, which is then the time of these ancient Buddhas. And following the sadhana and the initiation rites and the empowerments, because basically you cannot get through these teachings other than with help of transmissions of the lineage teachers who carry the imprint, the teaching. You know, so there is something more going on in through these lineages and through these empowerments than can be easily interpreted from a book or from a story or even from the mandala itself. And these are the so-called mind transmissions that are well described in Tibetan Buddhism. So there is a category of teachings in Tibetan Buddhism that are only passed through mind from a teacher to a very special teacher to a special disciple or few of them each time. And they are not taught verbally. They are not written in a book. They are only hinted. It's told, okay, they exist. And on special occasions when these teachings are necessary, they are transmitted from one person to another, to the next generation, and then next generation, and next generation. And so they are preserved. So they are preserved also in the mind of humanity, and they connect us back to these ancient beings who were mind beings. By definition, they did not have a separate body and mind, as we colloquially experience it as human beings. And because in the human process, how shall I call that? There is always a gap between the physical experience and the mental, the abstract experience. And what we're trying to do, what we are anyway doing naturally all life, is we are trying to connect them both and work on two levels simultaneously. The mind category of teachings and work, it has its own path of getting empowered. So this is what our ancestors left to us.
So among they could us. See. So they could see that there's a progression, that we will kind of come out, we will bubble out of it, but we've been down in the depth and now we're coming back up to re-become the people who landed on the ship. That's who we are, that's who we will be, but we're down here kind of climbing our way back up to it. And the Buddhas are probably some of the people who originally fell from the ship, who have come back and started to regain their own experience. Is that right?
This is probably how our human consciousness and conscience relate to those ancient events, is that we are trying to purify and we are trying to reconnect and relearn even physically and mentally. I believe that it's the same story that goes through all of the esoteric schools.
Absolutely.
On Earth.
There's only one story, isn't it? And it's our story.
If you have studied the Hebrew esoterics and the Kabbalah tradition, who speak about the original man, the Adam Kadmon or something like that, who is essentially the original being, and he has all the tree of life. He's the blueprint, the perfect blueprint of the being that God or the creator or the universe once spit out. So this is the same ancestor. And if we go to the Christian esoterics, and then we are connecting with or through the Christ, through the enlightened being, the being of light in us, through the love, we are connecting directly to the same being. And we have many meditations in Hinduism that are exactly of similar type yogic meditations on the chakras and on the prana and on the deities. So I believe that every culture knew the way. In all times, they knew there is a way how to connect to this high spiritual realm and keep rebuilding ourselves. Unfortunately, we are also encountering obstacles from some of our fellow humans who fell I would say, badly to the density and to the gravity of the matter here, that they lost the connection. And for the same reason that they lost connection, and they experienced the hurt, the trauma, the worst possible way, they really turned against life. At some point, they turned against the meaning of who we are, and they tried to stop this process to happen because they lost even a patience. I can, you know, I can empathize with the
100 billion years
with
is a long time.
Yeah, but we are seeing it. We are seeing it every day. We are seeing it around us. One thing that happened to me when I then woke up morning after this night experience, and then the morning came, and I had to get out of the monastery, and I looked at the street and saw things as they are, and I was thinking, oh my God, it's not so different. It's not so different as it's been thousands of years ago here. We did not get anywhere too far or too fast. We are still fighting the same principles, the same forces.
So this is a very interesting juncture. If we can sort of drill into this a little bit, because now you're talking about the interaction between the spirit being and the elemental of the earth. Because whenever you have a relationship that builds, we exchange a little, even in our earthly relationships between, men and women, you learn a little thing from the last boyfriend and girlfriend that you have. You gain a little skill. I mean, they may be interested in something so much that you kind of learn about it because there's no other. I've been one of my ex-girlfriends was a dog shower, and so I learned all about the whole dog showing and exhibiting and first prize and crafts and all that stuff. I learned all about that just from being with her. So whenever there's a relationship, there's always an exchange. There's always an evolution of exchange. So when the beings arrive, the Adam Kadmons arrive, let's call them that for the moment, and they touch the earth elementals, the earth elementals were spiritualized in a way that they'd never been spiritual. The spirit of these of the atoms came into the elemental of the earth.
There's they became partial.
Yes, do you understand? And this is what became person, persons, people, and egos, and all of that stuff.
Exactly.
Just trying to put into a sort of a concept of my own, the way I look at things. So the development of what we call the dark side, or the development of the process of fear, let's say,
right,
has taken us to this division.
Well, I believe that the whole process of what has happened here is simply natural with life, and it's a kind of process of searching for identity or reclaiming own identity on a new level. So what these people had to do after they landed, and what has happened to them, so they were forced to reclaim their identity on the terrestrial level. And the identity is what you call ego, is very much attached to the hub of identity. So this is what people, if you inquire about it with a common man, and he starts spilling all the stuff on who they are and what's their name and who were their father and mother, and all the kind of thing you write to passports and resumes and all these things. So this is the part of the grip of this kind of narrow line of terrestrial identity, and then fell to the avenues of this labyrinth that we have here down on Earth, that has its, as you ask about the karma, so it has its own. It had developed its own karmic pathways, and where the action and reaction paradigm happens, and where people answer to each other by deeds and by speech and by mind and how they reflect. So there's a particular frequency we fell in to this dense human world.
So we grounded, we merged with the ground, we became person.
Yeah, and you said fear, and then it becomes terrifying for people to think they would be losing their identity. Because, you know, the process between the original being, the original man, and the terrestrial man was not smooth, and the path from one to another is long, is almost as long as wide as the universe is. I mean, it's a big distance.
It was a shock. That was the main thing. It was a shock, and that's caused the trauma.
But it was a biological shock. It was completely a biological shock. I believe it would be important at some point if we could even define, maybe we don't have words or terms, correct terms for who we were previously as a biological organism. We were particle world where we kind of advanced plasmatic charge, advanced highly organized plasmatic beings. And a whole time-space shift happened when we fell to this environment. So the identity is kind of far away one from another, and to cover the gap, to cover the abyss, and then the abyss, then between the two, there is a gap, there is an abyss. In that abyss, there is everything you can imagine. There are all the realms of the astral worlds. There are the realms of gods, all the imaginations. there is an emptiness. There is a huge abyss of emptiness in the middle. That what terrifies people probably the most, that you advance spiritually and you are suddenly caught in some kind of emptiness. It happens practically to many philosophers. And you cannot get to the other side. Finally, we always get there, that the connection happens, but we kind of have to traverse the abyss of the emptiness. But many people living a human life, they really fear you losing their identity. And confronting them with other reality, be it star visitors, or saying that we have another greater identity that belongs to space, it suddenly it produces a basic atavism instinctive fear. All right, so okay, am I to give up on everything that I've been told to thus and so far, and am I going to give up on my father and mother and name and all I have, and what's the promise, what's the warranty,
yeah,
that
what's it for me?
Yeah, what's the warranty that I'm really someone on the other side too. So I believe it's the identity crisis, the identity grip that blocks us so often from reaching maybe to one, to another, and so forth.
Yes, I hear that. The identity, who I am, is the, you know, what, and I'm trying to get to the point. Is how do we define who I am? This is the big question. And this is the philosophical question all throughout history. And maybe here, now, we know who I am is. And I am is the community that is gathered around the Bodhgaya, the Kala Chakra, that has been there for, as far as we're concerned, forever, and has been emanating its energies out from that place all over the world.
Yeah, one way or another, we have this every living human being on Earth has this connection, this wonderful potential, and it's up to them. I don't believe it can be forced, or it can be somehow prompted in a big way, or people are trying to prompt it. That's maybe it's the, you know, this the civilization danger, that we are really now trying to push through a hard way, or developing again the brute force, the nuclear power. Now coming the nuclear power, the physical force that we are going to need at the end, but it has dangers on the way, that people are really trying like to break through. They can't. It's difficult. It's difficult, I believe, for all of us to bear this and hold the process in control. So the controls, speak of controls, yeah. So the control is the hard thing. We lost the controls. We feel we lost the controls, and we are trying to install them from some way, impose them on ourselves. And so we are chasing our own tail here.
Back
because
to the,
we, mm, right.
Back to the loop. So now, so here's the interesting thing. One of the things that we know, there's a creature here we call a tick.
Yeah.
Do you have tick? You know what a tick is?
Yeah, they can carry the encephalitis, these things.
Yes,
right?
Horrible little things. But the way to extract them, you can't rip them off like that. But you have to uncoil them. You have to untwist them. They are screwed in. Like a bayonet, like a light bulb, mm-hmm. And you unscrew them like a light bulb. Mm. I believe that very much the universe has a kind of screw-like, we talk about
property,
vortices, screw-like properties. And that in order, yeah, again, I've got some visuals here, which we're not going to have on the radio, but I have this beautiful thing. This is called a flippy flux, right? And it's made of stainless steel tape. It's very like...
Yeah, I can see that, yeah.
Stainless steel tape. And it's got a twist in it, and it's welded, so it's a single line. And when you let it go, it turns into a toroid. It's a very beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And... Go ahead.
It's what Nassim Haramein does, right?
Yes.
Exploring the toroids, toroid physics.
He's got one of these as well. So
the shapes.
They're really cool things. Now, here's the interesting thing about it, is that in order to open up the vortex, you just apply a little twist between your hands. I'm holding it top and bottom, and I'm just applying a little twist. And then you see, in the middle, you see the tornado open up.
Uh-huh.
And then anything can just drop through to the other side.
Yeah, suddenly the matter has completely different properties. And
it's collapsed. And I'll tell you, look what this thing does. It's beautiful. Did you
see? Wow. Yeah.
I want to send you one. Can I send you one?
Sure. Yeah, thanks.
So this is
I'm a kid too, yeah.
Yeah, well, and this is the other thing. This is the other quality of Adam Kadmon, is they're childlike. They're gods. They're childlike.
Well, childlike, but they were really mature beings.
Mm.
You know, I feel a child,
You see? You know, we shouldn't separate them from us because we are them. And it's that playfulness that is our creativity. It is that sense of, oh, wow. You know, that's what creates things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's make more wow. Let's keep making wow, because this is what, and I think people imagine highly spiritual beings to be all kind of, very serious and everything. But the most spiritual being that I've ever met was laughing and joking all the time. And he had a particular kind of laugh that was like this. Hang on. I can't force it, but it was a very genuine giggle.
Yeah, in India, you know, all the gurus are most of them are fun.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, the true gurus, the real ones, are always funny because it's right. So here we go. Like, watch this. The humor applies the twist where the truth can drop through.
Yeah,
that's what does it. It is. I mean, every humor is takes it. Whenever you do something humorous, you're expecting something, and it's twisted, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
That's what makes you laugh. That's what opens up your laughter. The twist.
I read some kind of definition of what a joke is when you observe the brain, and it's happening. Allegedly, it's happening when you apply two dissonant ideas and try to position them against each other. So then we experience a joke. When you understand a joke, the joke, the humor is lost. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So you need the little hole within, the emptiness within, for it to be a joke.
And this is where I'm getting to, because that's a mind the gap moment. Right now, so you may not have heard of this. In London, there is a railway station, underground railway station, directly under the Bank of England.
I think I've been there. I've been there.
And every person who's visited London knows that as the Mindy Gap station.
Yeah.
And there's this sound because it's built on a curve, and because the platform of the station is curved and the train is straight sections, there are these enormous gaps you could easily fall down in. And so they have this enormous announcement every time the doors open: mind the gap, mind the gap. And it's a very, very, very cut glass English accent, male dominant, authoritative voice saying, "Mind the gap." And I've really got to put that in a tune somewhere because it's such an intense symbol.
Yeah, for me, the London Metro, the underground, has a particular feeling to it. It's unlike any underground I've been to. It's kind of ancient.
Yeah.
It's like it's always been there. It's something like, I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting.
So, and indeed, there's probably a lot of subterranean tunnels below. I know certainly that there's a post office, a postal network. Underground railway system that is completely separate from regular metro underground, and presumably the government have got theirs, and then the greys have got theirs underneath, and then the reptilians have got theirs underneath, and then the Garthans have got theirs, and then there's the Earth Dracos, and anyway, so it goes further down. So we're not alone. So meanwhile.
And then there is the fast shuttle that connects directly to the U.S. and the continental Europe, right?
Correct.
Long before they build a tunnel.
That's right. Yeah. The porcelain tube trains that are magnetically levitated, made of porcelain, so that they don't for some reason, they're not affected by magnetism, and when you get in them. For some reason, when they go supersonic, but you go to sleep, there's a very lulling thing about being in the magnetic field.
So you then never remember where you came from.
So you don't remember the journey. So it's just there. So it seems to happen instantly. It may happen. It may take a few minutes. But so the journey. So how we do? So we've got about 15 minutes left, Eva. And it's been a fascinating and truly enlightening journey so far, because what we've established is that at some point, the DNA of the being that has become us started out as these highly traumatized, dwarfed, numbed,
poor dears,
if we could go back and give them a hug.
Yeah, we completely tried to. We tried to help them best as possible, and we really felt very sorry for them. There is no point that they would have been looked upon in a wrong way by ourselves, by our ancestors. And what they became, or what anybody became since then, is a chain of causes and consequences that goes from processes like this kind of rise and fall and regeneration and evolution and devolution and evolution and devolution. So we are probably biologically try to repair ourselves many times, and then many of the evolution branches, they ended up somewhere at a cul-de-sac or kind of blind street where there is no way to go further, and the tribal gene says stop, and we won't go this way anymore. Either we became too violent, or we became too degenerate, or we all became attached to particular food, and when the food goes, we are nothing. And so it's kind of a peculiarity of human evolution.
We've been distracted. We've been distracted along the way, really.
Yeah, we are trapped here with kinds of paradigms and getting close to the animals. So later on, we had to adopt those animals and their evolution to our proximity, and started to feel close to them, and even like linked to them mentally and spiritually, all kinds of ways. Yeah, there are many traps here.
Yes, it's a very, as I said, a very distracting world. But here we are. I mean, you know, I believe that we have a very, very good opportunity in this time to bring everybody back together again. Because, you know, in the 60s, they always said, we got to get ourselves together. All the songs say, we got to get ourselves together. And yeah. I don't believe that actually what they're talking about is forming groups of protesters or anything like that. But actually ourselves, our personal selves, our beingness, we need to get together with all the different fragments of our current life, our previous lives, our very, very ancient past. Now, what you've been talking about feels to me very much like the way we've developed medicine, in that we first of all started by cutting off bits that don't work properly, like amputations. Yeah, that's one of the early forms of medicine, you know. But we got it a little more refined, and then we were able to repair the bits, and then we figure out all this stuff. But we can't figure out cancer, because cancer is caused by the attitude of cutting things away. It's the same mentality that creates cancer that creates surgery. So it's a self-sustaining thing. So because the idea of cancer is that you can separate something from itself. And so now we're getting to the idea of holistic cures, and of understanding that the diseases are caused by the traumas. And then when you clear the traumas and you get the understanding and you restore the vibration back to the first place, then everything just comes out in the wash, as we say. And, you know, there's no need to do any medical stuff. There's no need for any kind of treatments, because you can just repair yourself from the inside back out again. You know,
that was the ideal. Yeah.
That's the ideal. All right. So yeah. To that end, we can return ourselves, find the vibration of the Adam Kadmon people.
Yeah, but we have to make some compromises here, about the ways we are dealing with ourselves, because the idea of doing that just purely naturally is probably the oldest of ideas that exist and that predated us, and some people are obviously able to do that better than others, but at no time everybody is able to jump. Not everybody is healthy enough, not everybody is capable of doing that, and we have to facilitate life, kind of intelligent life for people, for the adaptation process for living here. We have to make sure we are able to stay and make life bearable. And so we have also technologies that are helping to protect this subtle, the genomic potential and our intelligence from the hard environment. And this is, no matter how it sounds to one camp or another camp, it's an important thing to realize that not everything that is here naturally is friendly to us. That is like friendly to who we are and who we were. It was never friendly at the first place. And we need a little help, and that's why we are evolving all these wonderful technologies, and that's why we are becoming this pampered human being with selected needs and protections, and we need all these, the shields from the sun and the sunscreens and the houses. Yeah. Yeah, and everything can adjust to temperature, and because if we are not able to do that, if we don't do that, we spend too much of our force and life on just on fighting with the environment, on survival.
Yes.
It's beautiful. It's what our human ancestors did for many thousands of years, and they were healthier mind-wise, but they were not able to get far. I think they were not able to get together verbally. They were not able to get together as civilization without all those technical aids and without speaking common language. So maybe they were like some, say, the Neanderthals, or at least one of our ancestors, who were advanced spiritually, but they did not talk a lot, actually. They had developed intuition, and they had great artistic ideas, imaginations, and all this.
Yes.
And they did not need those words, and they did not need all these technologies, and they were just happy like that. But with climate change that is inevitable, and with the cycles native to the planet, they were wiped out, they disappeared, or they were broken by the more sophisticated tribe of the modern human, who brought more complicated means, better means of survival. So I believe, as a whole, humankind, as a body, we have to make compromises, and we have to think together, right?
And more than think together, I think we need to feel together. We need to breathe together. Is probably the best therapy for us, to be silent together and just breathe the same air for a little while. And so, Eva Zemanova, it's been a delight and a pleasure. Zemanova. I softened the Z because I've been sort of reading German, and it softens.
Yeah, it's like the Zulu. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's been do you have a website that people can connect with you?
I don't. I don't at the moment, but they can still find. Maybe they can find the Bodh Gaya event report that was written by Barry King and me a few years back, and that contains the gist of the information. And by the way, to mention Barry, who lives in Chelmsford and is UK. UK researcher and whistleblower himself, so he's been ill for quite some time now. So I would like to convey the message to him, or to people who happen to talk to him. Please be kind on that being, because he's also like one amazing soul with a deep memory and with knowledge of many, many secrets. And he needs your protection and help. And he's been ill for very long now. We don't know actually what's the case, but
okay. So we need to hold Barry King in the highest light of health and joy, and see him in a happy, healthy position, maybe riding a bicycle down a lovely country road in Chelmsford in Essex. Eva, it's been, as I said, it's been a delight. It's been a pleasure. It's been enlightening. It's been reconnecting.
It's been great pleasure and privilege talking to you.
Once again, yeah. Sometime in the future.
Definitely, if you can choose a subject that is near to your heart, and we can expand on there.
Excellent. So, thank you very much. This has been a very special Journeys with JP with Eva Zemanova. Thank you very much, and good night, everybody.
And the universe.
Okay, that's a wrap. Thank you, sweetheart. It's been such a delight. As I said, it's been such a delight. I'll record this I'm definitely going to put it on YouTube. It's a lovely thing. Do you have a picture of? I want to, because I have to make an image for the show, and so I'd like an image of you, and I also want the color chakra in the middle of it. You on one side, me on the other, and color chakra in the middle.
All right.
Yeah.
So there is no problem with the color chakra, obviously.
I'll easily find that. Do you have a picture of you?
Yeah, I my problem is that I look really silly on all pictures. Like any picture that look like me is similar to the pictures they made of me when I was like 2, 4, 6. All the same, or looks like a girl. So anybody who see me, they start like people. They laugh at me since childhood, and they laugh at me still. Yeah.
Oh, sweetheart. But there's a lovely one. There is a really nice one, and I think it was used on the Project Camelot one. And it's you. You're sitting in lotus pose, and with your hair long and.
Okay, but it's like 25 years.
Well, you say it's the same picture, so let's have that one, okay?
Do you mean the one on the Avalon?
Yeah.
On the Avalon.
Yeah, I think it's. I saw it just like a couple of hours before we started speaking. I thought that's a nice one, because that would go well with the Buddha thing, and I'll see if I can get a picture of me with this Buddha t-shirt on.
I can pass it to you over Skype.
Thank you, sweetheart. Thank you so much, Eva.
Anytime you really like, I mean, we don't have to record it, but anytime you feel up to a good chat about something, then I would be honored if you can find a way to me.
And indeed, if you...
Because there are so many things to connect to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. And as I said, I've got this healing modality that helps to reconnect you back with yourself after trauma, to get you back to the pre-trauma person. If you ever want to... have anything, because everybody's had traumas, so it's very useful, and it's very liberating for people.
Yeah, it's natural. It's you. Yeah, you is the healing Buddha, the medicine Buddha, the healing entity.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Eva. I've got to go.
Thank you.
Friends all arriving. Namaste, my love. Namaste.
Thank you.